And now it's time for the biggest bonanza on Blaze Radio. Live from the Bill Austin Radio Studio, this is the College Basketball Bonanza.
On this Sunday night, so happy to have you alongside. My name is Nicholas Hodow. Nick Kennelly out tonight. He is feeling a little sick tonight. We certainly hope he gets back to being better at some point, hopefully by next week, because we have a very busy February leading into March. Final show of January, if you can believe it, and we have quite the store for a discussion. The SEC Big 12 Challenge and the two main rivals from Alabama, Auburn and Alabama. They had a lot to learn this week. We start off with Alabama. Certainly one of those weeks that you would like to forget if you were the Crimson Tide. It was a very close and unexpected win outside the SEC Big 12 Challenge going on in the midweek at home against Mississippi State. That Bulldog defense gave Alabama everything it could handle. Bama shot 5 of 28 from 3, an assist to turnover ratio below run. It was a great six-man performance from Javon Quinterly, a team-leading 14 points, and that really was part of the story for Alabama. Noah Clowney, Brandon Miller each got 13, though the way Brandon Miller had been playing as of late, that's not quite as ideal as one might expect. Then it all came undone in Norman, Oklahoma in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. This was a blowout that went from bad to worst in a hurry. Oklahoma 93-69 against the Alabama Crimson Tide. This one was a stunner thanks to the veteran guards Jalen Hill and Grant Sherfield for Oklahoma. 30 for Sherfield, 26 for Jalen Hill, add in 14 from Tanner Groves, and good supporting cast performances from other players. And it was, quite frankly, a night to remember in Norman. 9 of 13 from 3, the Sooners. Got to give them props for that. Meanwhile, Alabama continued their shooting struggles from 3, 6 of 22 from the floor, less than 50% from inside the arc, 19 of 44. The assist-to-turnover ratio was even worse, 6 assists, 13 turnovers, over 2 turnovers per assist. Not a great night for the Alabama Crimson Tide on Saturday. Not even a good night for Alabama. This was, quite frankly, a very bad night for Alabama. And the biggest thing here is when Brandon Miller's off, they need other people to step in and perform very well. And it was a balanced performance for the Crimson Tide in Norman. 5 players had at least 10 points. Ryland Griffin led the team, surprisingly, with 15 points. The freshman had a very solid shift with those 15 points and 7 rebounds. And then Javon Quinterly, again, also taking a big step for the team with 12 points. Clowney had 10, Sears had 11, Brandon Miller had 11 in a very off-shooting night. Quite frankly, compared to what we have been seeing from Brandon Miller, this was not a good week for Brandon Miller compared to the dominating performances we have seen from the freshmen so far this season. And Alabama, what we're starting to quickly learn is they're going to need Miller to be an absolutely top four to be able to do anything crucial when it gets down to it. And we just haven't seen that from him this week. And that's really unfortunate for Alabama. They're really going to need him to step in and be that leading role. And at least this week, the contribution wasn't there to be the leading guy. And for Oklahoma, they didn't have that problem. They had 2 players put in those kinds of shifts. Grant Sherfield, really solid game from him outside of 30 points. Had 6 assists, just 1 turnover. And 3 rebounds as well. Just a really, really solid night from him on Saturday. Definitely one of those nights that you're really going to need from him consistently going forward if you are Oklahoma. And that's certainly going to come with a lot of challenges. In the Big 12, they've really faced this problem. When you get into that Big 12, it is difficult. Oklahoma, almost like the break outside of Big 12 play, really benefited them quite a bit. And certainly could be something we see from other teams going forward, that it could benefit them as well. So you would certainly like to see that going forward for Oklahoma. We'll see if that really gives them the real push that they need. Meanwhile, the other major rival, Auburn, also had a bad week, and this one was even more putrid than Alabama's, and the losing started in the midweek. A disgusting 16-point home loss to a Texas A&M team that really needed to get a big upset. The Aggies heading into that game 13-6, coming off a road loss to Kentucky. They had put a lot of momentum, but really needed to get that bigger win in SEC play. They got it against Auburn, and really it was a big, big statement win for Texas A&M. They had slowly gathered momentum with two first half runs, major runs, sustained momentum, and then they continued it into the second half. Auburn did not shoot the ball well at all from three on this day, on Wednesday, 3 of 16 from beyond the arc. Johnny Broome was about the only one who put in a really solid shift. 16 points, 7 rebounds, 7 blocks as well for the big man from Morehead State. Wendell Green also had 16. But Alan Franagan, Jalen Williams, Sepp Jasper, very off nights as starters for the Auburn Tigers. They showed a lot better fight against West Virginia, but that still wasn't enough on the road in Morgantown. 80-77 against a West Virginia team who, like Oklahoma, has been struggling quite a bit in the conference play up the Big 12. They really needed a win like this, and they got it. And Auburn made things very interesting down the stretch. West Virginia had started off really hot in the first half, and that was really what did it for them. Eric Stevenson for West Virginia, big shout-out to him, with 31 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, career high scoring night. Meanwhile, for Auburn, scoring was a little bit better. Jalen Williams had 18 points. Johnny Broome had 15. Flanagan with 13. Katie Johnson had 10. But once again, Sepp Jasper, a very off night. In 16 minutes, no points from him. Wendell Green only 9 points within 30 minutes. And some of the analysts, I should say, had been figuring that Auburn may have not been as good as originally promised. You look through this team's schedule, what they've done, at least within KenPom terms, they got the win against Arkansas at home to start January off, on January 7th, second game of the month in January. And the last game of the 2022 calendar year had that win at home against Florida. Non-conference wasn't great. The putrid 43-42 win against a Northwestern team was really starting to find themselves in the Big Ten, which is a very much a big logjam for second place. Now, right now, there is no absolute true signature win, and that's because of Arkansas struggles. Some consider that Auburn could be turning out to be a bit of a fraud. And I'm not sure if I'm ready to say that quite yet. I think the talent on this Auburn team is still very, very good. It's one of those teams that you really have to really prepare for very well. So I do certainly think that Auburn is still a quality team. They have to show it Wednesday at home against Georgia. Now, the game coming up for them on Saturday at Tennessee, now the new number one KenPom team in the country, that's going to be a tough game for Auburn. That's going to be tough. In addition to that, over the next 3 weeks, they are at Texas A&M on February 7th, a big rematch for the Tigers against the Aggies. And they're home against Alabama. That's going to be a big one there. Very, very much looking forward to seeing how that game progresses. And then Missouri on the 14th of February, also a game at Vanderbilt. And the way these next 3 weeks need to go for Auburn, I think they're very crucial that Auburn gets these next 3 weeks white. You need to win against Georgia. You got to win against Vanderbilt. I certainly think the home game against Missouri becomes of increasing importance for a win if you are the Auburn Tigers. I certainly think they need to find a way to be able to get the job done there. And it's certainly one of those cases where they need to get it, in my opinion anyway. The game at Texas A&M, you really need to play well there. And if you can do that, it'll take a little bit of pressure off for the game at Tennessee. And obviously, the rivalry pressures will always be on when you play Alabama if you're the Auburn Tigers. But I certainly think it's a lot riding on the next few weeks for Auburn. The national perception, just the flow of themselves in the SEC. 6-2 right now, but it can go south pretty quickly for Auburn. So there certainly is a lot at stake. And I think Auburn really they need to take this seriously, because it can seriously go downhill quickly if you are Clemson, or I should say Auburn. Get ahead of myself a little bit. You do not really want this to get too out of hand if you are the Auburn Tigers. So definitely need to get the wins you need to be getting. Let's move on to the Creighton Blue Jays in the Big East Conference. Creighton, ever since they got Ryan Cockburner back, they've been on a roll. After they started off the year 6-6, the six-game winning streak, followed by the six-game losing streak, they have done very, very well. 7-2 over the course of the last 9 games, including a 4-game winning streak that included home wins against St. John's and, more notably, Xavier. On Saturday, we look more into this game. This is really a domination for Creighton, a game that means so much to the Creighton community, the Pink Out game, Creighton versus Cancer. And they perform to the occasion so fantastically well. Arthur Kaluma had 20-9. Ryan Nebhard nearly had a triple-double. 11 points, 10 rebounds, 8 assists. Did have 5 turnovers, though. Shireman had 14. Ryan Kalkbrenner had 17-8 with 5 blocks. Trey Alexander had 13. All 5 starters getting the job done. That's the sign of a really dangerous team. And Xavier didn't shoot the ball quite as well from 3 as they would have wanted. Solely Boo, they did not get a lot out of him. Only had 5 shots in the game, which I thought was interesting. 2 points, 2 boards, 4 assists from him. He's been one of the bigger keys for Xavier over the last few weeks. Adam Kunkel, Zach Fremantle, Kobe Jones, they all still performed fine. Jack Nunchi had 9. But this is becoming more of a statement from Creighton, in my opinion. Creighton now 7-3 in the Big East. Creighton's an analytical darling. And when I mean that, really a team that is ranked really well analytically, yet may not be that, yet the analytical number may not be showing by the record. Creighton's 13-8. There are Labyrinth and Kempom sitting here tonight in the Bill Austin Radio Studio in downtown Phoenix. And to me, the way Creighton's been playing, they are not playing like an unranked team. They're not. They are playing like one of the best 25 teams in the country, in my opinion. Now, the 13-8 record makes me not feel comfortable putting a number next to Creighton just yet. So I'm getting very, very close to being able to put the number in front of Creighton. And if they are 15-8 by the time I'm sitting either in here or in the second room, hopefully when Canadian gets back with us next week, I actually might feel comfortable putting Creighton in my top 25. As crazy as that sounds for an 8-loss team at this point in the year, especially a 13-8 team right now. I just think Creighton is putting in so much good work that they are going to force my hand to put them in the top 25. They aren't that good. With that being said, at Georgetown, home against Villanova, at Seton Hall, these next 3 games become must-wins. And I feel very confident that they're going to do that. You look at the performances they've put in. Really going back to ever since the game at Marquette. Did their business against DePaul and Butler and St. Hall at home. Dominated all those teams, actually. Put in really good shifts against UConn and Xavier on the road. Really good shifts. Found a way to then upset Providence. Creighton was 9-8 at that time. Dominated Butler at Hinkle Fieldhouse. Took care of business against St. John's by putting up 104 on Wednesday. And then the win against Xavier. This Creighton team is to be taken seriously. And I really think it's because of the return to Ryan Kalkbrenner. When I saw Fedrick King in person against Arizona State in Las Vegas on December 12th, my thought process was, okay, Fedrick King's playing really well here at the center position. He had struggled 2 nights ago against BYU. Very weird that Creighton is able to put this thing together with a center who has clearly proven to be a really solid piece. Fedrick King, the freshman, it's one of those things where I thought he was performing really, really solidly at that point. But then you see this team with Ryan Kalkbrenner, it almost shows so much that I almost think Kalkbrenner is the most valuable player of this Big East Conference. Not to say he's the player of the year. In my opinion, player of the year and most valuable player are 2 different designations, especially when it comes to college basketball. It can be the same person, if you want. It can be the same person. But Kalkbrenner has shown his value so much over the last month or so that it would be impossible not to notice it. It's one of the big reasons why I am favoring putting Kalkbrenner in this position. I just really believe in Creighton with Ryan Kalkbrenner. It's as simple as that. He's making everyone around him so much better, And I have to give so much credit to Kyle Brunner for that, for this Creighton team, for really being able to do that. And it is just one of those things to where when it comes time at the end of the day to evaluate this Creighton team, they are bare minimum one of the top 36 teams in this country, in my opinion. Bare minimum right now. Bare minimum. And you have to give them that. Really, the big question was, is this team going to get that hump to get into the top 25? I think this week, no. I think the win-loss record is going to scare off just a little too many people from voting them. That's my opinion. I think Creighton's going to get more votes. But I certainly believe enough in this Creighton team to where they can absolutely get the job done at any time. I truly believe that. And just looking at the way this Big East is set up right now for Creighton, 7-3, a game and a half behind Marquette, Xavier, and Providence, who are all at 9-2. I think Creighton can absolutely still win the Big East Conference at this point. So everything is still on the line for the Creighton Blue Jays. They struggled, they've gotten it back together, and they are just making an absolute statement right now in the Big East. And if Creighton keeps playing this way, I would not want to face Creighton in March at all. At all. Just one of those teams that is so scary right now. 18th in net. They got a couple of key ones under their belt, including that game against Xavier. They were pairing their resume very, very well. This is truly one of those teams that you got to believe in my opinion. It absolutely is. And I honestly can't wait to see Creighton play again. I really can't. It's one of those teams. I absolutely am on board with them 100%. And I really do think Creighton's in the right spot at the right time. They're playing really, really well. The theme for me, continue peaking. Keep getting better. You can't peak right now. You got to peak in March. And if they keep getting better and better as time goes on in February, we're going to have a really dangerous Creighton Blue Jay team. We're going to take a bit of a break. We come back. We're going to talk to the Clemson Tigers. And we got a special guest on the program to discuss the Tigers. That's coming up in just a few minutes here on the College Basketball Answer right here on Blaze Radio.
Stuff in Jell-O again.
Dwight, I'm sorry, because I've always been your biggest fan.
Dwight falls for mainstream radio every time.
Where is my desk? This is totally unprofessional.
Okay, well, you're the one who lost the desk.
I didn't lose my desk.
Okay, calm down. Where was the last place you saw it?
Don't be fooled. Tune into Blaze Radio, ASU's local student station on blazeradioonline.com.
It's been a long day without you, my friend, and I'll tell you all about it when I see you again.
Peyton and Gabe are gone, and Heatcheck is dead.
Sight!
Hey, Jay Williams, take that!
Are you kidding me?
That's right, we're back. Join Kevin, Riley, Scott, and Ryan every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. for all things college sports on Blaze Radio, blazeradioonline.com.
Bro, you ever wondered how you could get paid to watch sports or, like, work in sports?
Yeah, bro. I just got done listening to this podcast with Austin Scott, Jeffrey Hingle, and Hayden Silly.
No way, bro.
Yeah, bro. And it's right before NFL kickoff.
No way, bro.
That's right. Tune into How To Sports every Sunday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m.
Oh!
Welcome back into the College Basketball Bonanza. I'm Nicholas Heldow, my other co-host Nick Kennelly out tonight. We continue on the bonanza by talking about the ACC regular season title race, and more particularly, the team at the top of that race, the Clemson Tigers. It's been quite the surprise, the Clemson Tigers, but they are a game and a half ahead of the Virginia Cavaliers for first place in the ACC. At 10-1, they've already increased their ACC win total from last season for a team that was picked 11th in the ACC preseason poll. Not only they were the big surprise in the Atlantic Coast Conference, but also the entire country. With more on the Clemson Tigers, I'm so happy to bring into the program via Zoom tonight. If I can get this working, unfortunately. Tell you what, we're going to make some adjustments here. Hopefully we can still hear the mic very well. Grayson Mann is joining us from Zoom from South Carolina. Grayson, thank you so much for coming on tonight, man. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me on.
Really starting off with your view from the game against Florida State yesterday. One of those teams that's been playing really well, actually. And very nearly gave Clemson a really resume-damaging loss. What did you see from your point of view from that game as you were watching remotely?
Yeah, so obviously it's a different experience watching from Little John. You go on this two-game road trip. I think you have to really start with the blindsiding news that was Brevin Galloway with his situation, which we'll kind of just leave for up to audience interpretation. But you have him coming out, you have Hemenway still out, and it's kind of how do they manage this injury roulette on the road against a Florida State team that shot the ball very well once they kind of settled into the game. For me, I think it really showed the mental toughness of this team. I think you're going to get everyone's best shot now. Clemson now has a target on their back, being first in the ACC. Florida State, like I just mentioned, shooting the ball really well. I think this was a game really where they had to find different ways to score. They were really shooting the ball well from outside, from beyond the arc, with Hunter Tyson going 4-for-4 to start the game. And then they got cold, and they had to kind of reinvent themselves within that just second half stretch where Chase Hunter had 10 points in the final 3 minutes. It's not the best team that we've seen from FSU, but I was really impressed with the way Clemson was able to pull it out.
Yeah, Grayson Mann, TigerIllustrated.com contributor, joining us now on the Bonanza here on Blaze Radio. Like I mentioned, Clemson having this big league in the ACC regular season title race. What's really been the energy around this program as a student at Clemson on campus during some of these games? Have you felt the energy around Little John Coliseum really increase over the course of time?
Oh, I think with each win, the excitement continues to build. It has been electric on campus. Usually the energy is surrounded by football, and we're spending all of our time and energy in the fall. But now that we've got this recent success in January, December, the excitement is really something that I haven't seen, especially in a long time with Clemson basketball. It's their best start in program history. I'm there about an hour before tip-off usually, and the student section is filled top to bottom. You can really tell that people are excited about the product that Brownell has put on the court.
Yeah, and we look more at the resume of the Clemson Tigers. They're still having some trouble convincing the analytics that they are as good as a team as they really think they are. Currently sitting at 7th in the conference in the net ranks at 58th. The 2 Quad 4 losses, probably part of that for sure for the Clemson Tigers. What do you think Clemson has to do to really prove to the analytics that they are as good as an 18-4 basketball team that has a game and a half lead in the ACC?
Yeah, I think it's just they got to keep doing what they've been doing, and just by it's the simple answer, but they just got to have to keep winning. I think the way we've looked at it with the rankings and how they've kind of passed the eyeball test with the analytics, that those losses to Loyola Chicago and USC have really, I think, hurt them in certain aspects, but I think it's not as big a concern for me, at least, because of the start that they've had. I think a game against Miami coming up at home on the February 4th, and then there's a game, I believe it's on the road against Virginia. They're just going to have to continue to just keep winning. They're going to Brevin Galloway, PJ Hall, they all say the same thing. They're not focused on what's going on outside. They're just focused on winning. And that's what they're going to have to continue to do. And I think if Clemson steadies the course throughout the rest of the season, there's no reason why they shouldn't be playing in March Madness.
Yeah, and we're still in the ACC as well. You really have to deal with teams like Florida State, Georgia Tech, even as Louisville team, as bad as they've been, they've kind of been dropping down the rest of the ACC. Do you really think some of those weaker teams in the ACC are having something to do with a team like Clemson being valued less than perhaps some other ACC teams? Or do you think there's something else that Clemson's been doing, like the 2 Quad 4 losses, may have something to do with that?
Yeah, I think you're probably right on the nail with that. It's a mix of both. There's a lot of teams in the ACC this year that aren't playing up to the par that I think college basketball fans set for the conference, and that's probably hurting Clemson when they're having their best year. You hear a lot of these pundits saying, oh, this is a down year for the ACC. Take a look at who's in first place. Just with given the history and the track record of the conference, you have a Duke team that's not ranked. You have a UNC team that's starting to find themselves, a Miami team. Everyone's kind of beating each other, and it's an interesting dynamic in a conference we've seen really dominate the college basketball landscape.
Again, Grayson Mann, TigerIsJoy.com contributor, joining us in the Bonanza right now. And as we look ahead to what Clemson has coming up within the rest of their schedule, there are some tougher games ahead. Miami at home coming up on Saturday. I'm sure Little John Coliseum will be fired up for that game. The next Saturday, the trip to Chapel Hill against North Carolina, that's all coming within the next couple of weeks. And with this game and a half edge that Clemson has, what do you think Clemson, first off, has to do to really
win either one or both of those games to try to keep their position atop the ACC standings sustainable?
So I'm actually going to answer that with a quote that Brownell gave us last night at the Florida State game. He says, for some runs like these, you have to be lucky and you have to have the players to do it. And they just haven't been as healthy at the guard position. They've also had some luck along the way with some really close wins. They just have to get healthy. I think getting Chase Hunter back last night was crucial for the Tigers, especially in that late game stretch. He provided a veteran presence, a different option with scoring, and really ran the offense at a quicker pace. When they get Galloway back, they're going to have an extra shooter. Hopefully when they get Hemingway back, that'll be a huge boost to this team. The healthier they get, the sky's really the limit for this team in terms of when they get healthy. It feels like we've been dealing with this roulette of strings of injuries, whether that's PJ Hall early in the season having to adjust to that, Brevin Galloway with a surprise injury, or Chase Hunter getting hurt after a Duke game where he's really come on the stage with the ACC, especially with Hunter Tyson too.
Yeah, certainly, and perhaps, I mean, some of these injuries could definitely have a big part of that. And really, the ACC as a whole, as a conference, they really put so much emphasis on the ACC tournament title that they didn't really go as far to not necessarily recognize the regular season title. But how big would an ACC regular season championship mean to the Clemson program to put themselves in that strange stratosphere of, in the regular season at least, we were the best in one of the best basketball back conferences normally in the entire country?
Oh, I think it's a huge talking point, especially for Brad Brownell, who's really felt the heat in the offseason going into this run where, hey, this has got to be the year to make some changes, make some improvements. I think being able to say, hey, Clemson basketball, ACC champion, regular season champion, that's huge for not only recruiting but building off of not just this year but the years to come with recruiting, with just kind of how the culture continues to take shape. I think a regular season title would be huge for this program. Just in all aspects, the community, like I keep touching on recruiting, culture, there's a lot of positive things that could be taken away from a championship for the Tigers.
Yeah, and again, Grayson Mann, TigerIllustrated.com contributor joining us. And just to bring this back really to the whole grand scheme of things of just how surprising this has been, just how surprising is this run really to you, really reporting on this team? I mean, this team not having so much expectation and all of a sudden going on this sort of 18-4 run, just really to you personally, just how surprising has this run been?
You know, it's interesting to really look back on the season, and you can point to certain moments where you go, okay, this team probably had something, we should have seen it sooner. I look at the overtime win against Penn State when they really had to battle against a Big Ten team earlier in the season, and you kind of saw a spark of, hey, this team's got mental toughness, this team can shoot, this team can drive to the basket, they can create shots in different ways. That's when I started to go, okay, maybe this year may be a little different than what we're used to. And then obviously when they started to go on this ACC run, most notably for me, was the road game against Pittsburgh where they found themselves down and had to crawl their way back into it. Those moments where they've won these close games have really shown me this isn't your typical Clemson basketball team. They're here to stay in terms of this season. I think they have a chance to make a tournament run should things go their way in certain spots.
Yeah, and it's just really a follow-up on that, those close games that they've really come out on top of. What's it been specifically that's really shown to you that, in your words, this is not a typical Clemson basketball team?
Yeah, so usually the identity of the Clemson basketball team is they're going to try to play a low-scoring game. They're a really defensive team. It's kind of the identity that Brownell's taken on. They're really, really able to score. I think they're nearly averaging 80 points a game, which for Clemson, if you ask any Clemson fans or students, they're kind of like, whoa, really? Hunter Tyson's emerged. Chase Hunter's emerged. P.J. Hall continues to be excellent. We know who P.J. Hall was going into the season. But I think it's the players like Galloway, Tyson, and just all those added pieces. They have four scores in double digits, and I think that's made the difference where if someone's not having a great night, someone else can step up. No, and I think you've seen the example, too, with since Chase Hunter's been out. Guys like Chauncey Wiggins and Dylan Hunter have really stepped up and played valuable minutes. It shows this team has depth and can win in different situations.
Yeah, my final bigger question for you, if there's any one player who's really improved the most on this Clemson team as part of this big run, who would it be for you?
It has to be Hunter Tyson. He's playing at an all-ACC level. I think he's nearly averaging a double-double. I think last time I checked, it was about 16 points per game and about 9.8 rebounds per game, something along that level in terms of the statistical matter. But his presence, I think, besides the stats part of everything, his presence on the court, off the court, I usually try to look over at the huddle. Who's really taking that leadership kind of role, that mentality, getting everybody amped up, being the loudest voice, in that little group right there. I think it's been Hunter Tyson for me, and he's really taken on this maturity, especially being an experienced veteran in college basketball. He's really taken that next step, not only in his game, but off the court too. He's doing all the right things.
Again, Grayson Mann, TigerIllustrated.com contributor. Grayson, where can our listeners follow you on social media for more Clemson coverage?
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Gray_Mann20. You can also follow Tiger Illustrated. Just type in TLN Clemson or TigerIllustrated.com. You'll be able to find the site there. And also you can try to follow my boss as well, Larry Williams, who's been just an excellent teacher and an excellent mentor to me and does really most of the legwork for the site. He's incredible at what he does.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us on this Sunday night, Grayson. Appreciate it, my man.
Absolutely. Y'all take care.
Back in 30 seconds here on Blaze Radio.
Attention.
Sir, yes, sir.
What is Arizona State's local student station?
Blaze Radio, sir.
And what do they broadcast?
The very best in sports, news, music, and much more, sir.
Where do they broadcast from?
The Bill Austin Studio in downtown Phoenix, sir.
And how do you tune in?
BlazeRadioOnline.com, sir.
At East Soldier. Now get in there and enjoy some good college radio.
Welcome back to the College Basketball Bonanza here on Blaze Radio. My name is Nicholas Hodel. Happy to have you alongside Nick Kennelly out tonight. Again, Grayson Mann, the TigerIllustrated.com contributor, just joined us. So happy to have him. And he provided some great insight there on the Clemson Tigers. Let's move on to the back half of our show now, the business end of our show. We are going to start with the weekly awards, my weekly awards for the week. Team of the Week, Player of the Week, and Mid-Major of the Week, as we always do here on the show. Starting off with my Team of the Week, it's going to be the Baylor Bears. After two quality home wins against Kansas and Arkansas, both of these are very close wins, particularly the Arkansas game. I thought Arkansas was really going to find that big win they needed to really get themselves out of the losing streak they really found themselves in. But for the Baylor Bears to get these home wins in a week where plenty of teams above them have lost at least one game. Some of them were quality losses. Some of them were very interesting upset games. But no matter how you see it, some of the teams lost them above them lost. And for me, that carries a lot of weight. I think Baylor, I am going to submit my top 25 at some point on Twitter at Hodel Sports at some point tonight. They are going to be in my top 10. That's where I am with the Baylor Bears. And that's because just keep winning. You keep winning in the scene of parody and chaos that are in right now, chances are you're going to be in for some very good news when it comes to the AP poll and also my rankings as well. And that's exactly the way I feel about the Baylor Bears. Really good week from them in a week where all things went to chaos again. Again, it's college basketball. We should expect the chaos by now. Baylor not falling into the trap. My Team of the Week. Player of the Week, Purdue, Zach Edey. He just continues to be a dominant player. He is the frontrunner for National Player of the Year. The way he's playing, it very well could be unanimous. Unless Joey Wilson has something to say about that. We'll see where that goes. But for right now, Zach Edey, two dominant displays this week. 24-16 to carry Purdue through a very tough home game against Maryland. Terrapins really gave Purdue all it could handle over the course of this game. Of the midweek, I should say, and it was a really good effort there from Zach Edey. And then he upped himself in the Sunday game against Michigan State. 38 points, 13 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals. Had a huge sustained run of momentum alone. They carried Purdue to a nice halftime lead against Michigan State. He is proving why he is the National Player of the Year. He is proving it on a nightly basis. He has been the driving force on a team who has found fantastic freshman guards, Fletcher Lawyer being one of them, and he has improved so much. He hasn't fouled all that often. He has good agility that allows him to get to the bucket for as tall as he is. And again, as tall as he is, it's a dangerous matchup for just about everybody. So an absolutely fantastic performance from Zach Edey earlier today in the midweek against Maryland, now scoring 24-plus in 4 of the last 7 games. Very hard to find someone doing that right now.
and finding Seattle doing it as well as Zach Edey. The calls for him to be the frontrunner for National Player of the Year, they continue to get louder and louder and louder. And if there weren't other people working on the database alongside the Boston radio studio here at the Cronkite School in Arizona State University, oh yeah, I'd be yelling as loud as I can. Zach Edey, National Player of the Year, period. Finally, my mid-major player of the week, it's Sienna. Big win for them on Friday against Iona to secure a one-game gap in the Metro Atlantic standings. Iona, as of late, they've kind of been struggling a little bit. Not gonna lie there. They have not shown their finest play as of late in the Metro Atlantic. And for a team that was projected to be the best team by far in the conference, kind of surprising that Iona has struggled against some of these teams. But again, just real quick to put it on Iona, 6-point home run against Quinnipiac for them. They kind of stayed flat in the KenPom rankings after that performance. But again, back to Sienna, really solid performance here for the Saints. 17-point home win, really just carried through the early second half, a 28-2 run. That's really what did it for the Saints. Two players with 18 points, Andrew Platek and Michael Baer, both seniors. Baer had a double-double with 18 points and 12 rebounds, as well as 3 assists. Really, really great performance from Sienna, and that's what you need if you're a mid-major. Followed it up earlier today with a 15-point road win at a Marist team that has not been good. 7-13, now a 4-game losing streak for the Red Foxes. But again, back to Sienna. It is now a full one-game gap over Ryder and a game-and-a-half gap over Iota. And you look at what's coming up there for Sienna. Manhattan on the road and Niagara at home. Sienna and Iona will meet again on February 26th at Iona's place. So that'll probably be a fun matchup if Iona finds a way to get some more wins together. But really, really good week for Sienna. My pick for mid-major of the week, really because of the stakes of that Friday game against Iona. Had they lost that game, you're looking at Iona being a half game ahead of Sienna. So a huge one for the Saints to pick up. Let's move along over to Bubble Watch. It's the recurring segment that will soon become everyone's favorite. Unless, of course, you're one on the bubble, then you're going to pay attention really intently and hope your team's not there again. We're going to start off with USC. Biggest theme of the Bubble Watch segment this week, I'm going to discuss what I think teams need to do to reach safety through the month of February. As most teams have played their final game in January, you got a few conferences playing on Tuesday night, final day of January. Wednesday starts off February. Can't believe I'm saying that. We go to USC first. Over the last 8 days, it's 2 Q1 wins for them at Arizona State and UCLA. And with what ASU is playing, by the way, might have to be very careful with that game. If ASU keeps falling off, you never know. That could fall out of quad one, but not going to say too much more on that particular front. This week for USC, they have the home games against the Washington schools, a quadrant two game against Washington State, and the quadrant three battle against Washington. Right now, I think it's going to be 2 must-win games for USC. That's going to alleviate a lot of the stress to next Thursday's matchup, February 9 at Oregon. I think you get 2 wins this week. You move yourself into a position where you're at a very good spot at 17-6. Again, I'm the hypotheticals. You might be able to afford that loss at Oregon. But win or lose at Oregon, you need to beat Oregon State on the road. You must beat California at home, for goodness sake. And you must beat Stanford at home. Particularly with the Stanford game, too much risk. It's probably going to end up staying quad three. That's the Washington game on Saturday. It's really a must-win game there. Biggest theme for this segment for me is these teams cannot take bad losses. They can't afford a Q3 or a Q4 loss. And that's the way I am with all teams right now. So if you get the 2 wins, you put yourself at 17-6 going into next Thursday against Oregon. You can afford to drop that. Let's say they do 17-7. Must win, must win, must win. 20-7. Then you get, right now, three Q1s in a row, at Colorado, at Utah, home against Arizona, and then a Q2 game against Arizona State. For safety. Again, we're assuming the loss at Oregon, so that puts them 2-5 in quadrant one. They're going to need a third Q1 win, no matter where they get it, and they might need a fourth. If the Q1 win is at Colorado, they need to root for Colorado to stay in the top 75 in net. That's the magic number for road games to stay quadrant one. Again, that is the magic number. So that's what you need right there to achieve. And I certainly think there'll be Q1s against Utah and Arizona. I think that's pretty much a given at this point. Again, we'll see how Arizona State is at that time. Right now, Q2, we'll see where ASU is at that point. The way they've been trending, I'm not too convinced at this point. But if you can get to 3 or 4 Q1 wins, win all the games you should, I think that'll put USC in a very comfortable position to make the NCAA tournament. Might still need a win in Vegas to be safe, but I think that you'll put yourself in a good spot if you take care of business and grab a third and maybe even a fourth Q1 win. I think a fifth will definitely get the job done for USC, but if we're talking about minimum requirements, get that third Q1 win at least. You might need the fourth to be safe if you are the Trojans, be that third Pac-12 team into the NCAA tournament. Let's move on to West Virginia. They're picking up the pace, folks. 3 wins in the last 4 after a 5-game losing streak. 2 of those wins have been quadrant one wins. And the game against Auburn slipped the quadrant 2. Auburn's 31st in the net. But if Auburn gets into the top 30, that will also be a quad one win. So the slate of things right now for West Virginia: 4-8 in quadrant one, a couple wins in Q2, a win in Q3, 6 wins in Q4, no losses in those back 3 quadrants. With an overall record of 13-8, they are 25th in the net, with their strength of record being 41st in the country and a good out-of-conference strength of schedule. Combine that with the gauntlet of the Big 12, it's a top 10 strength of schedule by the net. And you're going to have Q1s and 2s everywhere. There's a given. That's a given. 3 of them are Q2s. 7 of them are Q1s. And it's really difficult to judge a team like this as far as what they need for safety, because when you're on the bubble, the more Q1s you get, the more you stand out. But you still have a losing record there. That's where things get interesting. The number of Q1 wins that West Virginia is going to have, assuming they continue this momentum into the conference slate, pick up some wins, I certainly think they need the Q2s. That is home against Oklahoma this coming Saturday, and then a 2-game stretch in 3 days, February 18 and 20, at home against Texas Tech and Oklahoma State. Got to win the one against Texas Tech for sure. I think the games against Oklahoma at home are probably mandatory as well for safety. That would put you 5-0 in that second quadrant. And then you have these 7 Q1s to deal with. If you can go, let's say 3-4. Let's say 3-4. Puts you 7-11 in the top quadrant. 4 losses. Combined with the 3 Q2 wins, that would be 6 wins. That would be, 19-11. They're safe. That's a given. That's a given for me. The more Q1 wins West Virginia gets, I think the more safe they'll be. I think that's probably the best thing I could tell West Virginia fans right now. Find a way to win some games. Don't necessarily worry about your conference record unless things start going terribly south. Then we'll have a big problem to have. But for right now, if you're West Virginia, you're looking at yourself at this moment, being on the 11 line, on the right side of the bubble, more Q1 wins, it'll take care of itself rather easily if you're the West Virginia Mountaineers. Advancing on to Wisconsin, they are in a really bad spot, if I'm being honest. 12-8 overall, 74th in net. That is because of a really bad stretch. 6 losses out of the last 7. The win is in the second quadrant. So you are now down to 74th in net. None of the analytics are with you, the other ones. And while your net strength of schedule is still good, at 10th in the country, really doesn't mean much. You're 2-6 in the first quadrant, 4-2 in the second quadrant, a win in Q3, 5 wins in Q4, no losses in either quadrant. They need to win games fast. And the 2 Q3s they have on their schedule right now, February 14 against Michigan, and then March 5 at Minnesota. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. That's a must win. That's a given. They'll have 2 games left in March to play for the Big Ten tournament. Outside of that Q3 game, you have 3 Q1s and 4 Q2s. I think the more Q2s you can pick up, the better. If you exit February 7-3 in Q2, have that substantial record, you'll be more than fine. From there, I think they need to pick up 2 of these Q1s. At Ohio State on February is when they probably need to be picking up, if I'm being honest. Ohio State slumping. Wisconsin kind of slumping as well. 2 slumping teams. Must-win game. Certainly for Wisconsin. Also for Ohio State, who's digging a massive hole for themselves when it comes to resume point. Sunday will be a big game for them against Northwestern. That'll be major for them. And then that next week at Penn State, at Nebraska. I think if they pick up 3 of the 4 Q2s, put themselves 7-3, pick up 2 of the Q1s, be 4-8, obviously win that game against Michigan, where would that put them here? 3-1 in Q2, you're picking up 2 of the 3 there, 3-1, 2-1, 5-2, 6-2, doing some quick math there. 6-2 would put you 18-10. That would leave you in a very good spot if you're Wisconsin. Assuming the analytics agree with this. Assuming the analytics put Wisconsin in a much better spot than 74th. Assuming the analytics put Wisconsin around the spot they were in middle of December, just inside the top 50 in net, I think Wisconsin at that point would be fine. Again, we're talking all hypotheticals here. Not necessarily expecting these teams to do this. But that's where I think Wisconsin could be safe. 18-10, good rise in the analytics. At that point, I think Wisconsin's in a very good position. Let's close things out, I think, with Nevada. I think I might have time for one more here. 15-6 overall, 37th in net. Really good net strength of schedule. Other analytics aren't quite agreeing here. It's been a tough stretch of things for Nevada. I think we talked about this, myself and Nick, on one of the after party episodes a few weeks ago. This stretch for Nevada is crucial. They had so many Q1 opportunities, no Q3s over the last 3 weeks or so. Particularly in the last 5, they've dropped 3 of 5. They dropped 3 Q1s, all of them. UNLV, that might not stay Q1. We'll have to pay attention to that. But the 2 wins they got, home against Utah State, not quite Q1, very close. And home against New Mexico, barely hanging on to Q1 status. It's kind of the way a lot of this is in the Mountain West. A lot of this hangs on these top 5 teams. San Diego State, Utah State, Boise State, New Mexico, Nevada, playing incredibly well. Through February, Nevada only have 1 game left to play before the Mountain West tournament in March. They have 3 more Q1s this Tuesday against San Diego State. That's a massive one at home for Nevada. A Q3 against Air Force follows that, and then 2 more Q1s with a Q4 game in the middle. At New Mexico, at Utah State, those will stay quadrant 1 for sure. The Q4 game in between February 10 at home against Fresno State, and then 3 Q3s in a row against San Jose State, at Fresno State, at Wyoming. The Q3s are a must-win. The Q4 is a must-win, obviously. Those are 5 games Nevada has to win, in my opinion, for safety. That puts them at 20-6. What do you do with these Q1 games that are very important? A 20-9 Nevada team is not safe. Not at 2-8 in quadrant 1. They need to find a way to pick up one of these games. The home game against San Diego State on Tuesday is a massive opportunity but Nevada cannot afford to go away. Big difference to get that third Q1 win. Should have stayed there. The road games. Pick up one of them. Pick up one of them. Should they win all five of their bottom two quadrant games? Again, puts them at 20-6. The home game against San Diego State puts them at 21-6. Splitting the two Q1 road games puts them at 22-7, I believe. That right there, I think, would be pretty darn safe. Of course, then assume they don't lose at home against UNLV. I think that's where Nevada would feel, I think, pretty comfortable with the position they are in. That wraps it up for Bubble Watch. Again, more Bubble Watch segments coming all throughout the month of February as the road to bracket season really hits in. Let's talk some game picks, folks. And we talked a lot about it last year, that SEC Big 12 Challenge in particular. Had some more picks on our Twitter at College Bonanza. Again, that's the place to follow all of our college basketball content. You can see it right there for our video viewers over on Spotify. And I open up our prediction tracker here. We both have picks for the midweek games. Good enough for me. Picked up a couple of games I did over Mr. Keneally. 11-5 for the week, including the SEC Big 12 Challenge, where those were my gains. Picked up the Indiana win over Ohio State. Lost the game between Rutgers and Iowa. Rutgers defense did not really show up well against Iowa. So right now I'm at 32-14 for the 2023 calendar year. My partner 26-19. Let's go into the midweek games for picking. And we are across the board except for one. I'll talk about that strategy later. Baylor at Texas. That's a big one in the Big 12, and my philosophy here has been the home team in the Big 12. So just how tough this conference is. For me, if it ain't broke, don't try to fix it. That's where I made the gain with Iowa State over Kansas State. Perhaps the only time I'll pick against a home team in the Big 12 is Texas Tech. Sorry, Red Raiders, just have not been up to par this year compared to the rest of your Big 12 conference members. We both have Texas over Baylor. We both have Kansas over Kansas State. I expect some fireworks in this rivalry game between Kansas State and Kansas. This is a must-watch game. If you have to pay whatever the cost is now for ESPN Plus, I can't remember what it is now. If it's 8, 9, whatever the cost for ESPN Plus is, pay up. Get to watch this game on ESPN Plus. It is an absolute tragedy that a game like this that could end up being a top 10 game is on a streaming service. Pay the money, watch the game. This is going to be so entertaining in the Big 12. And I cannot wait to watch this if I get the time to in my busy college lifestyle. Indiana at Maryland. We're both going with Indiana. I've been really impressed with Indiana over the past few weeks. Really had what I thought was an inexcusable squeaker at Minnesota, but they played so well at home against Ohio State. They're in my 25. They are starting to play that well again. And I think they'll go to Maryland. This will not be an easy game for Indiana, but I will take the Hoosiers over the Terps. Nick is as well. Providence at Xavier is our next midweek game we're picking. We're both on Xavier, which is a crucial game in the Big East. I expect this to be a really compelling game, but CentOS Center has proven to be a very good environment, and I expect that to be the case once again. Boise State at San Diego State on Friday night. A couple different ways I could have gone with what Mountain West matchup I wanted to put in the picks for the midweek, but I chose Boise State and San Diego State. We both are going with the Aztecs, Fiejas Arena Center, whatever it is. I can't remember. Sorry, Dominic Stern, former host of the show. I know you're probably screaming right now listening to the show. Whatever it is, the Aztecs are going to dominate there because that environment is going to be so, so energetic and electrified. Cannot wait for that game. Final midweek game, VCU at St. Louis. This is the 1A10 game I think I'm going to put in the pick sheet this year. With just how bad the conference has been. This is a battle for first place in the Atlantic 10 Conference. Assuming things go these teams way in the midweek. I'm going with VCU. Knicks going with St. Louis. I think VCU has just proven a bit more. I'm actually very disappointed with the St. Louis team. Great talent, just has not been a good year, particularly in the non-conference. They're really starting to show their strength again in the conference slate. But he is going with the home Billikens. I'm going with VCU on the road. That should be quite entertaining. Our weekend picks, my weekend picks at least, quickly. Purdue and Indiana, I'm taking Purdue. Kansas State over Texas. Iowa State over Kansas. Duke over North Carolina. That's an underrated game. That's a must-watch game, in my opinion. The big rivalry in the ACC. Gonzaga on the road over St. Mary's, taking the Bulldogs. And Virginia on the road against Virginia Tech. Those are my rapid-fire picks. For this coming Saturday, you'll see Knicks on our Twitter at College Bonanza. Hopefully there's a little more difference there for the weekend. Coming up in the after party on Wednesday morning, we'll have to debate the Pac-12 and the Mountain West. I'll have that big debate for you. What conference is the better one out west? And should the Pac-12 be in panic mode over that discussion? Plus, should Louisville fire Kenny Payne after the season? It's been an absolutely putrid year in Louisville basketball history. Is it time for the first-year coach to get the X? And I'll also discuss some tight mid-major title races. That's going to come to you Wednesday morning on your preferred podcast platform. Coming up tonight at 8:30 here on Blaze Radio. Again, you have a half hour of good tunes here on BlazeRadioOnline.com. And it's College Baseball Show here on the station, Road to Omaha, with Jaden Taylor, Blake Neiman, and Ryan Blank. Then at 9, catch Pixar with Paris as Ben Paris discusses everything within the Pixar universe. That'll do it for tonight's College Basketball Bonanza. Again, hopefully Nick Keenan will be back with me next week. I've been Nicholas Hodel, as we do every Sunday night. We're going to leave you with one shiny moment for our live listeners here on BlazeRadioOnline.com. Have a very good week, everyone, and we will see you in the month of February.